Stay tuned for The Cinema Clash, as Maryland-based critics Charlie Jewell and Hannah Buchdahl debate the merits of new releases, from the mainstream movies that Hannah tends to favor to obscure foreign films that Charlie likes to champion. It's free-flowing, unedited conversation with an occasional wine wager. Two very different perspectives, one entertaining podcast. Let the clash begin.
Hello and welcome to the Cinema Clash. I am Hannah Buchdahl of ChickFlicks.net, joined remotely yet again by my golden co-host, Charlie Jewell of CharlieJewell.com. Hey, Charlie.
I love how this week I'm golden and other weeks I'm like cat food, I'm cat litter, and this week I'm golden, and I assume it's because the 78th Annual Golden Globe Awards are this Sunday, February 28th, on your local NBC affiliate.
Yes, that is indeed why I let you be golden for 1 week.
Oh, thank you very much. Thank you.
You'll be tarnished by next week.
This wasn't even related to the Golden Globes, but I found a wonderful Malbec in our local beer and wine store today, which is what I'm imbibing on. What are you working on over there?
I'm working on water again. My days are just by the time we record this, I'm half asleep. But I will start, because people don't know this necessarily, but we can now see each other while we are recording, even though our audience can't see us right now, unless we decide at some point to upload this. But it's now that we can see each other virtually, I think I'm going to revisit our weekly wine wagers and also be able to have our wine reveals related to various movies that we just haven't been able to do in months and months and months and over a year.
I do miss those. Yeah, it is over a year now. And I do miss, matching the wine, matching the beer, and making you guess what it is. And then you guess wrong. And then you think, da 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 da. And you think, oh, this is a terrible whatever. I miss that.
Yep.
But all right, I think, how about this? Let's make a wine wager. I have one. I have one for you. We can wager. We can see who's right. We can see who's both wrong. And I don't know how we're supposed to settle the wager, because the wager is, you're supposed to buy me the wine, to drink the next week. So I don't know how we fulfill the wager.
I can leave it on your porch. But that's assuming, wait a minute, but if I win, you can just leave it at my front desk.
That's weird, but okay. The wager is pick the Golden Globe Best Picture Drama. I'll give you the five nominees. One of them we're going to talk about tonight because it's out. The Father, Mank, Nomadland, Promising Young Woman, The Trial of the Chicago 7. Hannah, who's going to win that category?
I will say who should win is Promising Young Woman.
No, that's not what I asked, Hannah.
I know, but I'm getting there. I think what should win is Promising Young Woman. The second runner-up should be Nomadland, which I think is still a possibility. But based on the crazy, crazy track record of the Hollywood Foreign Press and the kinds of things they seem to go for, from things that I'm reading, apparently a lot of people are putting their money on The Trial of the Chicago 7, which I actually think is a very, very poor choice, because while I thought the ensemble acting was very good in that film, I did not even consider it remotely to be up there as the best picture. But if I have to pick what I think in order to win a bottle of wine, I'm going to go sort of out on a limb here, and you know what? I'm changing my mind. I'm going to say Nomadland. I'm going with Nomadland.
Well, we're safe, because I wasn't going to pick either of those. The Hollywood Foreign Press Association is taking heat this week. I mean, serious heat. They've taken heat before, but it's back with a vengeance. The 87 members of the Hollywood Foreign Press Association, it's no secret, can be wined, can be dined, can be bought. And it's come to light today that they haven't had a black member in 20 years. 20 years. The hashtag is trending. Hashtag Time's Up Globes. Mm-hmm. And, it's mostly celebrities tweeting this, which is weird, which is ironic, because, they have this outrage, maybe even this fake outrage every year over the Globes, how they're not inclusive, how they're not diverse. And then throughout the year, they spend their money, they spend their advertising budgets trying to get Globe nominations and trying to get Globe wins. So, It's a self-licking ice cream cone.
A little disingenuous, yeah.
You know, it kind of reminds me of a couple years ago, hashtag Oscars so white.
Well, they're saying Globe's so white.
Which fixed itself. You know, they opened up Academy membership, and then, you know, it proved itself when Moonlight won. Hashtag time's up, Globes. But, okay. The Father is from Sony Pictures Classics.
Wait. What's your pick?
I'm doing it now, Hannah. I'm doing it now. It's from Sony Pictures Classics. They don't spend any money, so it won't be The Father. Promising Young Woman, Focus Features. Nope.
Yeah.
And Nomadland, Searchlight Pictures. Nope. So it's between Mank and it's between Trial of Chicago 7, which are Netflix. They spend money.
Yeah, right.
The Globes are the only people that love Mank. So I'm picking Mank.
You know, when you bring that up, though, I'm actually now thinking I will go back to the Trial of the Chicago 7 because that was Netflix, right?
No backsies. No erases.
And I remember, hey, you know, this hasn't been printed yet. So I'm thinking, because I was reminded during this whole uproar about the wining and dining that we actually talk about every single year. This so-called controversy
we're not getting wine
and
dine.
But remember, I think, was it about a year ago or maybe 2 years ago now that I was incredibly jealous of the fact that all these people we knew had been flown out. Netflix flew them out to LA for some very fancy screening of The Irishman.
I do remember that.
And I think that was Netflix. And I think that it ended up just giving a very long and not so thrilling film an extra boost. And I am convinced that part of that was because when you're schmoozing with the director and with the stars, it's harder to be critical. And so I do think that if Netflix did anything similar, and I might just not be aware of it this year for the Trial of the Chicago 7, then I'm thinking that maybe that will actually give them the edge. So here's my formal, I'm switching. It's a woman's prerogative. I will give you a carafe of wine, but I am going to switch my vote and go with Trial of the Chicago 7, and you are going with Mank.
And get ready for the one category that could cause the most outrage Sunday night. Is best supporting actor. If Sacha Baron Cohen wins for Trial of Chicago 7 over like Daniel Kaluuya, get ready for the tweet storm of outrage hell. It's going to hit the fan.
Well, also because I do think that one of the nominations for that other wacky category where Borat actually maybe fits the category this time in terms of best comedy or musical film, I think Borat subsequent movie film is listed there. And so it's possible that that there are a bunch of Borat fans out there in the Hollywood foreign press. And maybe they'll be looking to reward Sacha Baron Cohen in more ways than one. But I hope that doesn't happen because I just think that, I don't know. I just want something to happen to surprise us in a good way. And I am looking forward to Tina Fey and Amy Poehler, if nothing else than the Golden Globes. I have a feeling Amy Poehler and Tina Fey will absolutely find some brilliant way to mock the whole controversy surrounding the whiteness and the potential bribery that goes on with these awards.
Potential bribery. Yeah. Okay. All right. So let's talk about one of those five Best Picture nominees, The Father, which is earning Anthony Hopkins, this unknown actor out of nowhere, these lauds and plaudits, role of his career. He hasn't done anything lately. He hasn't done anything in his past. Let's talk about this Anthony Hopkins character. So this is apparently, I watched it. It's not apparent. This is probably, I'm going to go ahead and say, the best film ever made about the trials and tribulations and paranoia of dementia. Late, old age, not early onset, old age, it's time. This is who get dementia, guys like this. He's old. It's very subjective. It is from Anthony Hopkins, who's playing a man named Anthony. So don't get confused. He's playing Anthony. He's retired. He's living with his daughter, or he's living on his own in his apartment. Maybe it's her apartment. It's subjective because it's from his point of view. It's from no one else's point of view. We see what he sees, and that's it. Even if it's right, and even if it's wrong, that's why a lot of times we are off our footing. We are uncomfortable. We are awkward. He wakes up, and his daughter comes over, Olivia Colman. We love Olivia Colman, and she's angry with him. Dad, you chased off another caretaker. We needed her. You chased her off. And he's like, all right, we're going to hire another one. That's when she says, I'm moving to Paris. Well, you know, he's in his ways and he has routines. He doesn't like this news. She's moving to Paris. But 5 minutes later, there's a dude sitting in his apartment that he's never seen before who claims he's his son-in-law. What do you mean you don't know me? I'm your son-in-law. This is my place. Like, what do you mean this is your place? This is my place. I've lived here for like 60 years. And then his daughter comes home and it's not Olivia Colman. It's Olivia Williams. Excuse me? This is why people are saying this is the most accurate portrayal of dementia ever filmed, because, well, I don't have it, but I assume this is what it's supposed to be like. You're off your footing. You're unsure about your surroundings. Is this true? Or are they messing with him? Or is this what's happening? Is he going back in time? So that's why The Father is a fascinating film, Hannah. It's not the greatest film ever made, but man, this film threw me for a loop.
I did not like it. I love the performances. I mean, you can't go wrong with Anthony Hopkins or Olivia Colman. So, I mean, this is one where you watch it for these two performances, and maybe then you forgive what you liked about it is what I just did not like. I don't buy into the fact that it's necessarily the most accurate portrayal of what might be going on in someone's
brain. You say that and you have to tell me what is then.
Well, that's just it. We don't know. And so as a film, it had the narrative structure was so off kilter that I couldn't enjoy it. I just didn't feel any sense. I mean, granted, yes, you're not supposed to feel any sense of rhythm.
Anthony can't feel sense either.
But as a viewer, it just did not appeal to me. I mean, yes, I loved his performance. I love him in everything. I mean, he's just a good actor. And she's just a really good actor. And if you sort of take them individually in their roles, yes, I can be all for it, but I did not like overall the structure of this film. I thought it was just completely confusing, and I don't think that made it this great portrayal of what somebody might be going through with Alzheimer's. I just think we've seen other ones. You know, you've seen different stages of Alzheimer's presented in movies with really good performances. I don't think we've seen just different variations on what it can do. I just did not care for it. And so it's to each his own. I know you liked it for the things that didn't work for me. There's no way.
It's supposed to be.
It should be in the top five.
It's supposed to be confusing. Like that's the director's intention.
Exactly.
He wants to confuse you. Therefore it worked. On you.
You know, it didn't work on me. Yes, it worked that I was confused. So
the director he's a first timer. He's a French novelist and playwright, Florian Zeller. And he adapted it with one Christopher Hampton from his stage play. And it's got that feeling you always call it. Hey, this feels like a play. And I feel like it could make a fine play. But you're right. In the middle of this subjective, distorted reality and past, because there's a lot of stuff that Anthony still remembers from the past that he believes is present, like the insinuation of a second daughter who he swears is still around, what happened to her, and something about his daughter's husband, but I thought you were divorced, but wait, you're moving to Paris, now you say you're not moving to Paris. This feels so realistic. Now, my parents, they're old, because you always think your parents are old, but you know, they're not to that age yet where this is a factor. But it just feels like this is what it's like. This is what it's like when your parent just cannot grasp reality. That's how effective this film comes across.
No, I mean, for you, I think everybody's going to internalize it differently. And so again, I think it's going to appeal to some the way that you've latched onto it. And it's going to be considered not a very engaging watch to those like me who just did not appreciate. I just couldn't get into trying to sort through the confusion or to just accept that confusion is the whole point. I mean, to me, watching a movie where the whole point is that you are going to be confused is not an enjoyable movie experience.
It's original. It's creative. It has an astronomical tomato score. Everybody loves the performances and the movie. You're in the minority.
I do not discount that the performances make this a movie worth watching, but I do not see it as a best picture. I see it as Anthony Hopkins potentially being a best actor and Olivia Colman potentially being best actress. Beyond that, it's one of those ones where I appreciate where I think that the performances are better than the movie.
Thank you for the transition. Speaking of performances are better than the movie, let's talk about The United States versus Billie Holiday, directed by Lee Daniels. We know Lee Daniels. We met him way back when I was in college for Monsters Ball. That movie knocked the wind out of my sails. We remember him from Precious. We remember him from The Butler. And now he's telling us the true story, the real story of Billie Holiday. Because what I know about Billie Holiday is Diana Ross from 1972's Lady Sings the Blues, and she made Billie Dee Williams the victim. Turns out he's not the victim. He's a bad guy. Billie Holiday, played by first-time actress Audra Day. Now, if this film, if we had seen this before we nominated, before we voted,
Andra,
Audra Day Andra would have been on my list. I'm saying Audra, not Andra.
Andra.
Andra Day.
Andra Day.
She is so good. She is so good. She's Grammy nominated. I went to listen to some of her tunes after the film. She is so good. And so she went to... She has to sing a lot of Billie Holiday songs. And Lee Daniels is like, hey, it's okay. Lip sync. Everybody does it in these biopics of musicians. Remember Renee Zellweger?
Mm-hmm.
Judy Garland? Lip syncing. Andra said, I can't do that. I have to, if you want this performance from me, I have to sing. So they figured out how to get all the modern microphones in there and hide them, and they put them in the old style microphones and hid them in her clothes. And she sang these songs for real while being recorded. And it's phenomenal. She is so good. And thankfully, while it does suffer from certain biopic formula problems, the film is not Billie Holiday was born, she lived, she did this, she did that, and she died. It's actually structured around a song called Strange Fruit. Never heard of it before. I know a lot about it now. Strange Fruit got her in trouble. It's an anti-lynching anthem. It's saying the song's about don't lynch black people. And apparently that's controversial, especially back then in the 50s. And the agent, Harry Anslinger from the Federal Bureau of Narcotics, makes it his personal mission to destroy Billie Holiday. You know, he says it's because of drugs, because she's a heroin addict. But really, it's because she was singing like an original civil rights anthem, which is why I like The United States versus Billie Holiday more than most critics. Everyone's raving Andra Day's performance, but not the movie. They don't like the movie. I like the movie, Hannah. What do you think?
I did not particularly like the movie, but I liked Andra Day's performance for sure. I don't think you would have. It wouldn't have worked at all. I mean, you could not have Andra Day not actually singing and having her in her first, there'd be no reason for her to be taking on this role and having this be her first acting role. What makes it so, what makes it work for her is the fact that she can sing. Not only can she sing, but I mean, she can sing really well. And so, and she can perform Billie Holiday's songs as good as Billie Holiday, if not better than Billie Holiday in some respects. I really was not all that familiar with her. But then when I was reading up and realized that she did the song Rise Up, I was like, oh, that's where I've heard her. And so she's very good at these anthem ballads. I mean, that's just right in her wheelhouse. And so I definitely like her performance. But again, I did not particularly like the movie. I had seen a Billie Holiday documentary just a few months ago. And so I was kind of aware of how difficult her story would be to tell, because it's very hard to, I think you found a lot more sympathy in the Billie Holiday character than a lot of people might have in the past. I mean, there was, she was a drug addict. She was, she did suffer from alcoholism and was self-destructive in many ways, because she had this really awful upbringing. And then she was able to sort of find some salvation in her music. But her story, you just sort of draw on, it is terrible. I mean, this movie does put into the forefront an aspect of her story that I was not familiar with, in terms of the feds coming after her and kind of using her song, using the drug fight as an excuse to silence her from singing Strange Fruit. And she sang it as early as, I think it was like 1939 was the first time she sang it in a integrated nightclub in New York. And so that kind of pissed off the authorities when she continued to sing it. I think Andra Day playing Lady Day is a coup in casting, but the movie itself, I think, was still very flawed in its storytelling. And I didn't care enough about any of the relationships and any of the individual characters, even Billie Holiday herself. I just was not feeling enough empathy towards to make this movie really sing for me.
There was a reason she turned to heroin and alcohol. She was raped at 10. She was sex trafficked in a brothel. Some of that stuff was actually in the 1972 version and glossed over here. And by the way, notice the symmetry. Diana Ross's first acting role was in Lady Sings the Blue, and she got an Oscar nomination. So will lightning strike twice there? I found Billie Holiday as a character 119% more effective and more sympathetic than that ridiculous Renee Zellweger, Judy Garland character last year, which I think is a travesty that she won the Best Actor, Actress Oscar, which blows my mind.
I knew she'd win, but I knew that was one of those ones where you knew immediately. I knew she'd win. Again, Renee Zellweger won for a great performance in a not so great movie. And so to me, it was a similar kind of thing going, where you've got this great central performance and a not so great movie. And I think it's the same thing with Billie Holiday, that it's just Andra Day delivers a great performance in a not very great movie.
It's not a great movie. I think it's light years better than Judy was. But it's just one of those subgenres I'll never like. I've said this before, I'll say it again, I'm going to say it again in 2 weeks when we talk about a film called Cherry. I hate drug films. I find them so boring. It's so boring to watch someone roll around on the floor saying, I need my next fix. Let me spend all this energy and effort to get my next fix. There's so many movies like that, and I hate every single one of them. I didn't hate this movie, but I hated that half of the movie.
Right.
I loved Trevante Rhodes as the undercover agent that Anslinger sends to infiltrate Holiday's crew, get close to her, make her trust him, only so he can set her up to be very publicly arrested. I think he was the best written supporting character, because all the other supporting characters were underwritten, especially the members of her band and her friends, and Tallulah Bankhead, Natasha Lyonne. She's in it for like 2 scenes. They build her up and like, ooh, Natasha Lyonne. No, she's not even in the movie. So severely underwritten at times, but mm-hmm. It's still overall a thumbs up and a good film, despite it does have major handicaps.
It does. And I did enjoy sort of having that reminder of just what a great jazz singer that Billie Holiday was, and to realize just how many songs she really did that you're familiar with, even though we weren't around in her time. I'll Be Seeing You, God Bless the Child, Lady Sing the Blues, When You're Smiling. I mean, there are just so many songs. And then on top of that, to get the backstory to Strange Fruit, that to me was the best part of this movie. I like music biopics. That's a genre that I like. But the fact that this was sort of this drug movie kind of mashed together with, with my favorite kind of genre, I think that's why I just was sort of disappointed. It's like, give me the music part. The fact that the whole United States versus Billie Holiday, the court stuff was just such a, it never really made all that much sense. It's like, it was at the very beginning where you saw her in a courtroom, really actually getting sent away to prison for a year. I just think it was trying to be two different things. And so it never really landed on a consistent tone. And so that's where I found fault with this particular movie. But you mentioned Diana Ross, this having been her first role when she did the 1972 biopic. But her son actually is in this version. So things come full circle a little bit.
You will see Evan Ross. Yes, I did not put two and two together until I read about this film. By the way, stay through the end credits, because there's a song that Andrew is singing called Tigress and Tweed, which was co-written by Rafael Sadiq, if you know who that is. It's a banger. Oh, man, that's a song and a half. So let's stay with music. In fact, let's stay with Billie. We're going to talk about a documentary called Billie Eilish, The World's a Little Blurry. I love Billie Eilish. I have her LP, and I have to use headphones to listen to it. Otherwise, my neighbor can hear this album. It's so bass heavy. It's throbbing. This documentary, which is very invasive when you think about just cameras being where they are, is about the making of the album in Billie Eilish's home, in her bedroom, in her brother's bedroom, in the living room, and through what happened when she released the album. World tours, fame, fortune, the Grammys, a Bond theme, and she's like 17. You know, she's getting her driver's license, and you see her take her first solo trip in a car and how nervous her dad is. Billie Eilish is a documentary. It just made me think, where would Billie Eilish be? How would that meteoric rise look differently if her support system, if her family, mom, dad, brother Phineas, weren't there? Those guys are the real MVPs of this movie. It's fun to watch her. It's crazy. She could be like, you know, the next Britney Spears, the next, you know, whatever tragic tale have you, because Britney Spears has been in the news. But it doesn't look like it's going to turn out that way, because she has this huge, supportive, loving family, Hannah. How did that come across to you?
No, I agree. What came to my mind was Amy Winehouse and that documentary, and how people just enabled, you know, were not there to rescue her, and she was such a talent. And so I did. I kind of thought, thank God, you know, that she does have what seems to be this very normal. I mean, she's got crazy teenage angst stuff going on, and obviously has some mental health issues that she's very open about. And she apparently was, you know, into cutting and things like that. But I was not familiar with Billie Eilish's music. I really didn't know who she was until she captured, I would say, the cultural zeitgeist at the 2020 Grammys, where she swept and her brother Phineas was on stage with her. I was like, oh, she of the green hair and baggy clothes. That's really all I knew about Billie Eilish. I knew she was talented, but I was not, I had not really listened to any of her music. So to me, because I do like a good music biopic, and a documentary falls into that, considering this documentary, it had no business being 2 hours and 21 minutes, which I think is ridiculous. It had an intermission. But I was like, this, you know, you do not need, for something that's streaming exclusively on Apple TV Plus, to have, this is I mean, granted, it actually moved along to me. The pace was better than the Billie Holiday movie that was probably like 2 hours and 10 minutes. I thought it was very interesting to get sort of that peek behind the curtain into what it's like for this teenager to just suddenly, you know, be able to get to where she really dreamt to go, and to have the mother who's trying so hard to just be like, you're right, dear, you know, what'll make this better for you? You know, we don't want you to feel that you're being used or abused in any way. And she intercedes on her behalf a lot. And dad is like typical dad. I love the scene. There's like a scene where Billie Eilish is directing in her backyard exactly what she wants her music video to show. And dad's in the background, like picking up dog poop off the lawn. And so I just love that you're really kind of getting this very, very intimate portrayal. The filmmaker RJ Cutler, he knows what he's doing for this style of thing. He did Belushi. He did the September issue. Really good documentaries. So he kind of knows how to put this thing together. There were things that are dropped in there that you know the loose ends are going to be tied up, like with the loser boyfriend who's in there for a little bit. You're like, you sure hope he doesn't stick around. There's this obvious love-hate relationship she has with singing and songwriting in particular. And so you're seeing her essentially from 2015, when she's this excited teenager for the first time hearing one of her records on like KCRW in LA, which is, you know, that's sort of like the dream. And then when she's 19, you know, she's all of 19 now. And then to just sort of see through that sort of 15, 16, 17, 18, that what she's been able to accomplish and what she brings to her fans. So I'm not a Billie Eilish like fan. So I think this documentary works on two different levels. I think it works for the people who already know her music and are big fans, but it also works for people like me who just needed an introduction to who is she, how did she get here, and what's her deal. And it just makes me hope that that she will keep her head on straight for the most part and be around for a while.
It does work for those who know Eilish's music. I knew her, you know, I knew her album, I knew her music very well, and I already knew how it was made. I knew it was in Phineas's bedroom. I knew who Phineas was. I know who he is. He has his own side projects that are very good. That kid is talented. The whole family's talented. No good movie's too long. You know, it's a long documentary, but it didn't really bother me. RJ Cutler, he mentioned the September issue. I remember us liking that. We talked about it. Mm-hmm. He also did The War Room, which is probably one of the most influential documentaries of the past couple decades. Overall, very enjoyable documentary. The weird part, Orlando Bloom comes off like a skeezer. Or you know Orlando Bloom. He's now Katy Perry. Katy Perry's in it too. And there's a very interesting scene, couple scenes with Justin Bieber. Who's like,
oh, right.
He was, you know what? I have been in your shoes. I know where you are and I know where you're going. And she, you know, she's of that age. She was desperately in love with Justin Bieber. And they filmed their first meeting and they just hug. And she just breaks down in tears. It's a fascinating scene. Yeah. I really liked it. You're right. She's very, we were talking about this earlier over Messenger. She's very angsty. She feels feelings probably because she's, you know, 16, 17 in the film and she's feeling these feelings for the first time. And I guess that's what happens when you feel these feelings for the first time. You think they're the most biggest things in the world. You know, we all on the outside recognize, yes, that is a loser boyfriend. That guy's going nowhere. And, you know, everyone sees it but her because, you know, she's 17. So I really like this. This is going to spur some interesting conversations. It's a fascinating film. But be careful. It's not as altruistic as it seems. It's still, you know, financed and owned and pushed by Interscope Records. So, I mean, you know.
No, absolutely. It has a goal to really just to sell records. And I think it might very well do that. To me, it's similar. Apple TV Plus was the same one that had the Springsteen documentary premiere on it a few months back. And I love that documentary. So I don't know if you see my cat walking by. Yeah, so it, if you have Apple TV Plus and you like music documentaries, I'd say, hey, put this one on your list along with the Springsteen one.
And you went ahead and you saw another film this week about music. What was that?
So I saw one that you should have been watching because it's a small indie called The Independents. And it's about these three guys who really are members of a band called The Sweet Remains. So I wasn't familiar with it, but it's sort of folk rock. These three guys, they're big on Spotify, I think. And the film was inspired by their real life experiences together and how they came together. And then it was filmed just sort of between gigs over several years. And these three guys in this fictionalized version of their meet, they bump into each other by chance and they team up for sort of that one last shot at making it in the music world. And it turns into sort of this quirky, heartfelt buddy movie. And, you know, it's got this cool vibe that I think actually would give it a broader appeal. And there are some familiar faces that pop. It's got no big stars, but it's got just these brief appearances, like Richard Kind is in it and George Wendt is in it briefly. And Broadway phenom Kelly O'Hara is in it for like a minute, doesn't sing. Like, you got Kelly O'Hara in this movie and you're not, and she doesn't sing. But I was ready for a very nice sort of simple, engaging kind of movie. And I dug the music and I just thought the Independents is just one that I think people who have their little small dream bands of friends that kind of get together and unite and go on the road and do gigs would really appreciate.
Your whole life is ready for that simple next little nothing movie. So I can see this is right in your wheelhouse.
No, you would like it too.
I know I would. Absolutely. It sounds wonderful. It does. But it didn't shock me to hear you say that sentence. one film we did not see this week because they didn't screen it for critics, but I do want to catch because I have a child, is Tom and Jerry. They made a live action version and with animated characters, Tom and Jerry, and it's only on HBO Max, and apparently it's the worst movie ever made, which is totally, I want to see it. I have to see this movie now, but I don't own HBO Max, so, you know, what do you, I'll find it somehow.
Yeah, I'm going to let you you pick up that one, but I did. I found it very ironic that they just would not show it to anybody. And then it's like, you know, hey, this movie's out. And you see the commercials and they're trying to get the kids to see the commercial in order to get their parents to let them watch it. But yeah, I have absolutely, it just, there's absolutely been nothing about that movie or hearing about it at all that has made me even remotely curious.
No, all our money goes to Disney Plus. We're still working on WandaVision, and I know the entire, we haven't seen episode 8 yet. Sorry, I know it's out today. I'll watch it tomorrow morning, but if you're on WandaVision, good Lord. Have you been keeping up with that, Hannah?
No, I still have to. I still have to get back to some of my viewing of the Call My Agent, and I still need to start WandaVision. So, but we have too many other things. There's quite a bit coming down the pike that we need to watch.
It'll never stop, Anna. Like, you're never gonna.
It never does stop. I know. So it makes it really hard to go back. Like, you'll never go back and pick up watching The Independents, even though I know you'd probably like it.
I guarantee you, I'm never gonna see that movie. No. Even though I should and I want to. There's always seven other things I need to watch for the next podcast, and it ain't gonna be The Independents.
But you know what I'm looking most forward to for next week? Do you know?
Oh, it's Coming to America. Or is it the Dragon movie?
No, it is Coming to America. I am actually completely looking forward. I've heard really good things about it. A friend of mine has already seen it.
The Return of Zamunda.
Yeah, so I'm ready for just a really
fun nostalgia. Let me guess, I'm ready for what? Go ahead, just cue it up. I'm ready for a simple comedy. I want to laugh.
I want to enjoy myself. I don't want to worry about whether I have dementia and can't figure out like who's actually in my house.
So I saw a film. It was called Cherry. I alluded to it. That is in theaters right now. It's in theaters, but Hannah hasn't seen it, and she wants to wait for when it premieres in 2 weeks on Apple TV Plus, which is fine. I'll wait. But I was like, all right, Hannah, I'm gonna give you a sentence on why you need to go just watch it, like tonight, all 2 hours, 20 minutes of it, pretty much.
Oh,
it's because your boy Tom Holland, you know, Spider-Man.
Spidey.
He's in this. He's the main character, and there's a shot. From the camera is inside his rectum, and it's looking out at the doctor. It's looking out at the doctor from like inside his rectum. And it was like, I think if I told Hannah that one sentence, she'd be like, oh, I'm all over this movie. I gotta go see it right now.
Yeah, right. I'd be like, oh, do you really want me to see this movie, Charlie? Obviously not. But all right, well, I'm just going to hope that that I win my bottle of wine by next week, and you will have to figure out how to leave it for me somewhere safe.
No, we'll do a Globe's autopsy of all the outrages and how could they, and you know they were bought off. But when Mank wins, like, you just leave it on my porch, Hannah.
All right, well, we tune in. To be continued. So that is a wrap, thank goodness, for this edition of the Cinema Clash. Thanks so much for listening. As always, if you have a question, comment, need to vent to Charlie, which hopefully you do, shoot us a tweet, visit us at thecinemaclash.com. Till next time, wear a well-fitting mask, watch your distance, wash those hands, and when it's your turn, please take the shot.
Thank you.
The Cinema Clash with Charlie Jewell and Hannah Buchdahl is heard twice each weekend at 5:15 on Saturday and 12:15 on Sunday afternoon. Join us again next time for The Cinema Clash.